2 Corinthians chapter 6, starting at verse 11. We have spoken freely to you, Corinthians. Our heart is wide open. You're not restricted by us, but you are restricted in your own affections. In return, I speak as to children, widen your hearts also. Do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers. For what partnership has righteousness with lawlessness? Or what fellowship with light has light with darkness? What accord has Christ with Belial? Or what portion does a believer share with an unbeliever? What agreement has the temple of God with idols? For we are the temple of the living God. As God has said, I will make my dwelling among them and walk among them, and I will be their God, and they will be my people. Therefore, go out from their midst and be separate from them, says the Lord, and touch no unclean thing. Then I will welcome you, and I will be a father to you, and you shall be sons and daughters to me, says the Lord Almighty. Since we have these promises, beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from every defilement of body and spirit, bringing holiness to completion in the fear of God. Make room in your hearts for us. We've wronged no one. We've corrupted no one. We've taken advantage of no one. I do not say this to condemn you, for I said before that you are in our hearts, to die together and to live together. I'm acting with great boldness toward you. I have great pride in you. I'm filled with comfort. In all our affliction, I'm overflowing with joy. It's kind of an interesting section, especially that middle part, 6:14 to 7:1. It's interesting to me because that part doesn't seem to fit. So we'll talk about that in particular when we get to it. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 11 to 13. Paul opens his section. We've spoken freely to you, Corinthians. Our heart is wide open. You're not restricted by us, but you're restricted in your own affections. In return, widen your hearts also. And when I look at this thing, I see Paul in his relationship with the Corinthians. That's what's on his mind. That's really what's on his mind in the whole letter. He's having a disruption in his relationship with the Corinthians, and he wants that fixed. But if you look at what he's saying here, the disruption is not on his end. The disruption is on their end. And so this first section talks about relationships are built upon open hearts. Relationships are built upon open hearts. And the first part is that relationships are built upon two open hearts, not just one. Paul has spoken openly, he says, and freely with the Corinthians. And that is one of the elements of an open heart, to be free, to be open, in what he wants to share, what he wants to communicate with him. But the relation requires the open heart on both ends. Paul's open heart is not sufficient for this relationship to work. The Corinthians also must be open to him. It wasn't enough for him to love the Corinthians. And his openness of heart, his affection for them, his love for them happens in spite of how they've treated him. It happens in spite of all their shortcomings. It happens in spite of their opposition to him. And that's a very, very significant and important part of it. It shows the kind of love that Paul has, how great his love is. Because think about it. In your relationship with other people, when you're the one who is offended, when somebody does something hurtful to you, what do you want to do in the relationship? Huh? You want to pull back. You want to retreat, pull back, quit, give up. I mean, there's different levels to it, but our natural response is, that person has hurt me. I'm going to close off. I'm going to back away from that person. And that's exactly what Paul doesn't do with the Corinthians. He wasn't going to let that stop the relationship. He wasn't going to back off just because something had happened that was negative toward him. So the second thing here is relationships break down when one or both parties withhold love, affection, or openness. That's the beginning of the end to a relationship, when one or both parties begin to withhold love, affection, and openness. We have to be careful to allow that other person to be open and accept who they are without criticism. That's an important thing the Corinthians had missed. Even though the accusations against Paul were wrong and false, they were willing to believe those false things. But on top of that, as soon as they happened, as soon as they came across that kind of information, they began to shut Paul out. They began to criticize him and complain against him. And in relationships, when you have that feeling or sensation that there's a problem with that other person, you have to make sure that that doesn't escalate into the destruction of the relationship. To be willing to accept that person who they are. Allow them to be open about who they are and accept that without criticism. to not withhold your own openness and affection and love because of who you're finding out that other person to be. Paul didn't do that with the Corinthians. He pursued them in love. That's what he did. And this relationship is breaking down, and he goes after them. He sends envoys to them. He writes letters to them. He's not going to let this thing fall apart. He's fearless in his love and his pursuit of them. So the Corinthians, and what's interesting in this text is Paul says that, he mentions it by that name, Corinthians, you Corinthians. He does that to the Galatians. Oh, you Galatians. Paul does this when he has really strong emotion, he will use this, because he only does it very rarely. It's not his normal form of addressing. Usually it's beloved or something like that. But here he addresses them, these Corinthians. So the Corinthians, they must be open in love and unrestricted toward Paul. That's what he's calling them to do. That their end of the relationship has the problem. And they must fix that in order to restore the relationship that they should have with Paul. And really, this is no different than our relationship to God. It's exactly the same kind of thing. From God's end of the relationship, is there love? Yes. Is there affection? Yes. Is there openness? Yes. So whenever there's a problem between you and God, guess what? Guess who's at fault? It's our side of the relationship that changes. It's our side of the relationship that requires the reconciliation when things break down between us and God. And the thing is, he's pursuing us, and if the relationship isn't restored, guess whose fault it is? Yes, you're right, it's you. So it's often our own attitude of who we are, or our own sinfulness that keeps us from God, that hinders the relationship, hinders the restoration. It can also be another thing. In the case of the Corinthians, in the relationship that they had that was breaking down with Paul, it was a false view of who Paul was. A wrong idea of who Paul was. Guess what happens often in our relationship with God that leads to a breakdown in relationship with him? You having a wrong view of who he is. That's right. And that leads to a breakdown in the relationship as well, just as it did here. It also is the source of breakdown in human relationships. You have a wrong view of the other person, either because you've imagined an offense or something else, or you're unwilling to accept the person who they are. The other thing I want you to see, now this middle section, we're starting at verse 14, very difficult for me when I approach this section. Verses 14 to 7:1, 6:14 to 7:1. Do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers. You've heard this, you've been taught this. What does this mean? You know, that means you don't get married to non-Christians, you shouldn't enter into partnerships with non-Christians, etc., etc., etc. Great teaching, but what the heck is it doing right here? That's the problem I have. Why is it, number one, in this letter? I can see it being in this letter, but not right here. It's kind of like he's going along, he's talked all the stuff about ministry of reconciliation, chapters 5 and 6, he's on a roll, he begins to talk to them about their relationship with him, then look down in 7 verse 2, make room in your hearts for us, we've wronged. He goes right back to that stuff that he's just done in 11 to 13. What happened to it? Paul, what happened here in your mind? You were on this one track, you inserted this other section, now you come back to this. Why? So, a lot of people, when they look at this text, they say, what is it doing here? That this section is out of place. If not just out of place in the letter, it shouldn't even be in the letter, that maybe this is part of some other letter. Or some people see it as completely not authentic, that it was put in by someone else later. Because it really seems to break the context, not only of the section, but even looking at it as fitting the purpose of the letter, it's difficult. My natural reaction, based on textual evidence, is to look at it and say, it should be there. We don't have any reason textually. So remember when we looked at a section in 1 Corinthians and said, this just shouldn't be here for a variety of reasons? Can't do that. This appears to be very authentic. So we have to go then to the mind of Paul and say, why is this here? So I think this second section here is about how relationships, some relationships can hinder your faith. Some relationships can hinder your faith. See, Paul's talking about the relationship he has with the Corinthians and how there's a breakdown. This must apply to that somehow. It's not just a section that's talking about don't get involved in relationships with unbelievers. The relationship, that he's talking about here has to be part of the source of the problem in the breakdown of the relationship between the Corinthians and Paul. It has to. That's the only way it makes sense to have it here. Because if it doesn't fit that, then I would agree it shouldn't be here at all. So let's look at it from that perspective. If it's authentic, what's it doing here? So some people suggest that the reason the Corinthians are withholding their hearts from Paul is simply because there's some attachment that they have with some kind of paganism. Paul addresses this particular issue of paganism in the book of 1 Corinthians on a couple of occasions. Food sacrificed with idols, more specifically some other things in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 1 to 22. They would connect it with that, that there's these issues of paganism, and that's what's leading to this breakdown in relationship with Paul. And perhaps that's in mind there. Again, if he's dealing with that, I personally don't see that to be the best way of looking at it. It might be so. I just have trouble with that fitting the context still here, because he's not really clear on that. As we've been looking at the nature of these false teachers who have come to Corinth that have been stirring up the trouble for Paul, that seems to be more the issue, not the Corinthians having something to do with paganism. Another way of looking at it is perhaps Paul is clarifying a teaching of his that's being twisted. Perhaps these false teachers, these people that are accusing Paul, have twisted some of his words that are saying Paul endorses a connection with paganism. And this is part of a defense of that view, him being very clear that he's against it and trying to clear up a misconception they have of him. That's possible as well. I don't think it is the right answer, though. So let me, before I try to answer what I think might be a better solution, not necessarily the right one, I want to be very clear on that. I need another week on this text. But I don't have it. You're getting it. The unfinished section of the sermon here. Let's examine what Paul may have in mind with this phrase, unequally yoked with unbelievers. I've already shared a little bit of what that might be, because you're familiar with it, unequally yoked with unbelievers. What is Paul not including in this section when he says that, based on what his teaching is elsewhere in 1 Corinthians and other places? You can buy things from non-Christians. You could go shopping and actually purchase something from a non-Christian. But you know, there are Christians that look at that, don't be unequal, look, they won't even buy something for a non-Christian. They're very, very separatist. I don't think Paul would endorse that at all. I think he would see the folly in that and say, you know, you're not supposed to do that. You should be involved with the people around you. How else are you to influence your world and even bring the truth of the gospel to them? Paul isn't talking even about marriage here. And now listen, don't get this wrong. He's talking about people who are already married. He covered that in Corinthians. If a Christian is married to a non-Christian in 1 Corinthians, leave it alone. There's nothing, don't break that relationship apart. Remain married. So he's not talking about that. What is he talking about? The word here that should give us the greatest clue is the word yoked. That's not anything to do with eggs, okay? It's Y-O-K-E. It has to do with animals hooked together and pulling a plow. And that would be, in Paul's mind, from Deuteronomy 22:10. Don't take an ox and make it pull with a donkey, because somebody's going to get troubled, right? Can you imagine an ox and a donkey pulling together? I can't. I don't know what that would look like. I mean, I can picture the two animals in my head. I don't know who would win, the ox or the donkey. I think you'd probably plow in circles. And maybe that's the point. You're going to end up going in circles if you get unequally yoked with somebody. I think there's a protection against one of the two animals, maybe both, of having them try to work together. Paul doesn't really go into detail here what he has in mind. That's the big problem. So we have to think about, what is he thinking about? What does he think about issues of partnership or relationship with an unbeliever? So I think really the kind of things that Paul would be thinking about, because the issue for Paul is our faith. What are the things, what are the kinds of relationships that you could get into, the kinds of yoking together that you could get to with an unbeliever that would affect your faith, your Christianity? That, I think, is what's crucial in Paul's mind. So he's not talking about a lot of things in life, like shopping, but things that, if you get involved with the unbeliever, is that going to affect or hinder, most specifically, hinder your relationship with Christ, hinder your Christian faith? And if so, that is the kind of thing you should be careful of to avoid. In the case of the Corinthians, it's something that's interfering with their attachment to Paul. That's part of what their faith is. Their attachment to Paul, the gospel that he's teaching, things like that. That is what's crucial. Or other believers. It's your commitment to Christ. Things that are going to bring darkness. Looking at the way he describes it here. Darkness and light, what's the common? What will bring darkness into your life? What are the things that lead you into sin? What are the things that are idolatrous or compromise basic Christian doctrine to you? That is the grouping of things that Paul has in mind here. It's an idea that he's presenting of separation that affects the proper Christian affections. That is what he's talking about with openness of heart. The openness of heart that the Corinthians are supposed to have with Paul, something that divides that openness of heart that they can have with their apostle, Paul. That's what's causing the problem. And that is, I believe, the key to understanding the section. So, what is the purpose of this separation? Why is it significant? Well, of course, because all relationships are... Relational, that's right. All of them. Did I say it wrong? Funny. All relationships are theological. Remember me saying that? Funny. All theology is relational, but all relationships are theological as well, to flip it around. See? That's the crucial thing. And in the case of the Corinthians, in the case of being yoked together to an unbeliever, what you're doing is you're looking at your relationships in a theological light. How is this relationship destroying my theology? How is this relationship enhancing my understanding of theology? All theology comes down to our value system, right? So value systems are what relationships are made of, and it's tied to your theology. God's value system is sacrificial love for the benefit of others. That's God's value system. God's value system is relational, right? I mean, that's what it is. It's relational to have sacrificial love for other people. So when we make a connection with the unbeliever, that we can't be sure they hold our same value system because they're not a believer, is that going to affect the decisions that you're going to make with that person? Yes, that is. God intends us, through this passage, we see the quotations Paul's using here from the Old Testament, God intends for us to be his sons and daughters. What does it mean to be sons and daughters of God? Well, it means to bear his likeness. To, going back to previous part in 2 Corinthians, to reflect his glory. But not just a reflection of glory that comes from mimicking or doing the law, a reflection of glory that comes from actually the inside of us being transformed into his likeness. That's what he wants, to bear his likeness, to bear his glory. That's what it means to be like him, to be transformed into his likeness. So when you get into a relationship with an unbeliever, whatever the kind of relationship it is, because it really doesn't matter what it is, if you look at whatever that relationship is, whatever that tie is, is there a danger in your transformation into Christ likeness because of that relationship? Will that relationship hinder you or help you be transformed into Christ likeness? If it's a hindrance, it's wrong. If it's a help, then it's good. And there's a great danger in things, relationships with somebody who doesn't share a value system of sacrificial love for the benefit of others. It's going to hinder you in the transformation into that same kind of thing. So, to whatever degree the Corinthians have bound themselves together with that which is not Christian, it's affecting the relationship with Paul. See, that's the root of the problem. The problem, Paul says, I love you, I'm open to you, I have affection for you, there's something wrong on your end. Then he tells them what's wrong on their end. What's wrong on their end is they have another relationship that's disrupting the relationship they should have. That's what this section's about. It's not about making contracts with people. It's about your relationships with people and how those relationships, the sinful relationships, are affecting the good relationships. That's the big problem. The attachment that you have with sin, as it grows, you become more detached from God. The more your sinful relationships, the more the attachment grows in that one, the more your godly relationships will become detached. That should be a clue to you which relationships you should be keeping and which ones you should be abandoning. As your relationships with unbelievers become more prominent and influential in your life, your Christian relationships will diminish. Why? Because this is the relational aspect of value systems, right? Because all relationships are based upon common value systems. And the more your relationships grow with people who have a sinful value system or a non-Christian value system or value system that's not God, the more you will adopt that value system and begin to live it, which will, of course, diminish your proper value system, the Christ-like one. Primarily, this section has to do with, then, purity of one's Christian faith. That's what this is about. It's about the purity of your Christian faith. And where can one most closely hold to the gospel itself? The more close that you understand the gospel, the more that you hold to the gospel, it then becomes a protection against you for the thing that Paul is talking about here, what he's addressing here. So for the Corinthians, they're not merely having some problem with association with paganism. I think that's not probably the big issue here, although it might be. The big issue in the letter, the whole letter of 2 Corinthians, revolves around some false teachers, false apostles who are in conflict with Paul and attempting to do what? Diminish Paul's authority and thus the relationship he has with the Corinthians. That's what they're after. They want to destroy that relationship. Because when they do, they can promote their own gospel, their own theology. The protection the Corinthians have is what? Holding to the true gospel. So why does Paul cover that in the previous parts of this letter? To get their mind back to where it's supposed to be. To make them remember Paul's teaching to them. If the Corinthians can stick close to the truth of the gospel, they'll be protected from this false teaching that's breaking down the relationship with Paul. And ultimately, if it breaks down the relationship they have with Paul, it's going to break down the relationship with someone else. God. So if Paul has in mind false teachers here, which I think he does, and not idolatry, paganism, which I could be wrong about, it would explain why this particular section is tucked right here in the middle of Paul talking about an openness of heart, the Corinthians' relationship with Paul. Because it's the relationship he has with him that's so important. So, if I'm right in that, let me make the next jump. Later, in the letter, Paul is going to call these false teachers what? Messengers of Satan. If he's going to call them messengers of Satan later, perhaps when he says here, what fellowship is light with darkness, what accord is Christ with Belial, maybe he's not just talking about paganism here. Maybe he's kind of tipping his hand of what is really in his heart and mind, what he really would like to say about these people, but he hasn't yet gotten to it yet. So perhaps the real idea we must take from this text here is not contracts with Christians, non-Christians, which can be dangerous because of value system. I'm not diminishing that aspect of it. Not even syncretism with paganism, which is dreadful. But perhaps it's something even more common in the church. It's the yoking that the Corinthians are doing with false teaching, with false teachers. Note that I'm not saying that separation from Christians over doctrinal differences or differences in tradition and interpretation is what Paul has in mind here. That's not what he's talking about. You know what I teach about that. What I teach is we have the gospel. It's very clear. It's very simple. That is the basis of our relationship. There's a lot of stuff out there beyond that's tradition and interpretation. I'll give you a lot of leeway in that. You're willing to be really wrong in a lot of that stuff. You are. It's okay. However, I am saying that we better make sure that we understand the gospel very well to be wary of anyone who promotes a different gospel. The gospel part is what we protect as being very crucial. What Paul's dealing with people are not people coming along with different interpretations of how people should follow Christianity. What he's dealing with in Corinth are people who are coming along who are corrupting the gospel itself. That is a very different thing. This means standing against a legalistic addition to the gospel, adding law to it, which is exactly what some of these people would have been doing in Corinth. It's that false teaching that breaks down Christian relationships. Legalism in Christianity breaks down Christian relationships. Legalism destroys openness and affection between believers. This also means standing against any teaching that claims belief in Christ apart from the adoption of his value system. The adoption of Christ's value system is integral to the gospel itself. Do not let anyone ever tell you it isn't. Because if you follow that false teaching, you'll be filled with a form of, quote, holiness that's just an attempt to follow the law, which merely will reflect God's values rather than transform you into someone like Christ. You will be dragged away from God's value system altogether in the end, and it will ultimately destroy your Christian relationships. You will move to a law-based feeling between you and God and between other people. You'll become judgmental and destructive in your relationships. Think about it for a minute. How many disputes between believers were, or are, over ideas of holiness that are based upon some law or idea or interpretation rather than upon sacrificial love? And what's the outcome of that? Division, closed hearts, loss of affection. Exactly what Paul's dealing with the Corinthians. The more they listened to the false teachers, the more they closed their heart to Paul. So when he gets to this section, verse 7:1, since we have these promises, very interesting, promises he talks about here, these quotations that he's talking about, I'll make my dwelling among you, they will be my people, I'll be in your midst, you'll be separate, I will welcome you, I will be your father, you will be my children. These are promises he uses here. Very important, very significant. We're to look at these things not as commandments. You know, the separation we're supposed to have are not commandments like in the Old Testament for the Jewish people, commanded to do these things. No, they're promises. Very different way of looking at it. Not commandments to be followed, promises. Promises are an issue of what? Promises are an issue of faith. That's exactly right, because faith is believing the promises of God. So whenever you see a word like promise or promises, you know you're not supposed to be thinking about law and commandments. You're supposed to be thinking about faith. That's your big clue word there. So it's by faith that you are the temple of the living God. It's faith that tells you you are one of God's people. It's by faith you're the sons and daughters of God. And that faith causes us to more fully seek his value system. Not through laws. We want to become sacrificial lovers. Because when you become a sacrificial lover, guess what? You're not just following law in doing that. You are transformed into becoming a son or daughter of God. Not by commandment, not by law, not by legalism, but by a desire to be like him, to be transformed into his glorious likeness. The value system of this world, or paganism, if that really is the issue Paul's dealing with here, or the false teachers, none of those things produce within us God's value system. None of them do. To bind ourselves together with any of these things hinders our transformation, hinders our ability to adopt and live Christ's sacrificial love. Verse 2 of chapter 7, make room in your hearts for us. We've wronged no one. We've corrupted no one. We've taken advantage of no one. It gives you an idea what people are saying about Paul there. I do not say this to condemn you, for I said before that you are in our hearts to die together and to live together. I'm acting with great boldness toward you. I have great pride in you. I'm filled with comfort. In all our affliction, I'm overflowing with joy. And so in this third part, Paul's saying, don't let false accusations destroy your relationships. Don't let false accusations destroy your relationships. They do. They do. False accusations were hindering the Corinthians' love for Paul. We get another clue here about the issue that makes me wonder if it's false teachers rather than idolatry that Paul has in mind here. It was the false teachers that were saying these things about Paul, not paganism. It's the negative things that people were saying about him that were causing the problem. Paul has to deal with the lies as well as the liars to persuade the Corinthians to restore relationship with him. He lists again the accusations. That he's wronged someone, that he's corrupted them, that he's taken advantage of them. These aren't what the paganists were saying about Paul. These are what the false teachers were saying. So again, it's kind of why I take my view of the passage that I presented here. He says none of these things ever happened. Now, that's not to say that everyone in Corinth felt this was true of Paul, or that it was even commonly believed that all these things were true of Paul. Paul, though, as a part of his response, he says, I'm not bringing these issues up in order to condemn other people. And this is the other thing you have to remember in relationship. When there's a problem in a relationship, when you bring stuff up that needs to be dealt with in a relationship, don't bring it up to condemn other people. When Paul mentions these three things, and he's saying, you Corinthians, this is what's going on, he's not doing it to condemn them, he says. He's not holding it against them. He's not mentioning the charges against them in order to attack them. He loves them deeply, and he's saying, I'm not letting any of these things get in the way. Nothing like this is going to get in the way between you and me. He says, from my end, even though all these things have happened, there's no walls, there's no barriers because of it. So he's saying, if there's none on my end, there shouldn't be any on yours either. To do away with all these things that brought doubt or hindered love, that's what they need to do. These are the barriers. Get rid of them, he says to the Corinthians. He wants them to know the truth about what is said about him and the truth about who is saying it about him, because he knows what's at stake here. Openness with Paul and affection with him is the foundation for the Corinthians remaining in the true gospel. Because if these false teachers can separate Paul from the Corinthians, then they can insert false teaching, and the Corinthians will be susceptible to error. So, how we see Paul deal with relationships is very enlightening for us. The gospel is so important to him that he's not going to let it be diminished or warped by false teachers. Neither is he going to let his own heart be hurt by what people say about him so that it affects the sharing of the gospel. He would rather be wronged and have the gospel go forth. He'd rather be tough in his own heart than to say, oh, they felt bad about me. He doesn't sulk. He goes on the forefront, moving forward in love. Why is this so significant? Because true Christian relationships must be formed on the true gospel and our commitment to it. False teaching will end up destroying Christian relationships for two reasons. One, because all theology is relationships, relational, and false teaching will lead you to wrong living. And second, because those with false teaching often think they're the ones who are right, and they will sinfully oppose those people who really know the truth. That is why you must know the gospel, right? If you don't know the gospel by yet... by yet. Isn't that funny? I've been stumbling over my words all morning. I don't know why. Not enough coffee or too much. It's either one or the other. It's getting that balance. But you think that it's the gospel itself that is everything. It teaches you God's sacrificial love for you and your sacrificial love for other people. It's the whole package. But that's the extent of your battles right there. You don't fight over things that are additional to it, and you don't let anybody come along and attack what's crucial in the gospel itself. If you have any doubt left in your understanding what the gospel is, my sermons on the gospel from Matthew and Paul are available, and you should listen to them multiple times so you really get that. It's very important. We're going to have communion now. This is the thing that Jesus told us to remember about him, right? With his disciples, they said, remember this, or Paul writes in 1 Corinthians, do this in remembrance of me. It's very significant. He didn't say, remember my birth and have Christmas every year and give each other presents. What he said is, remember this. And the significance of it, of course, is the bread is all about what? Which means what? This is all about our relationships with each other. That's what the bread is. The bread is our relationships with each other. We are one body. We're to have sacrificial love for each other. Let's take it together. The cup, on the other hand, is about our relationship with God. It's the foundation for our relationships with each other. It's the fact that his sacrificial love for us. That's what this cup is. He said that my life is a sacrifice. My blood will be poured out as a sacrifice for many. This is what it is. This is God's sacrificial love for us. It's the basis of our sacrificial love for each other, which summarizes nothing but the gospel, right? When Jesus dies on the cross, he does it. His blood is poured out for every time you didn't keep his value system. Every time you failed on the bread part, that's what the cup's for. Let's take it.